The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this October 8th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on what has been a gorgeous Wednesday afternoon here in the Auburn Opelika area. Tons to get to on today's show. You've got us for the next couple of hours here on ESPN 106.7. We've got football to talk about. We've got Georgia football to talk about. Of course, Auburn-Georgia, the Deep South's oldest rivalry, coming up quickly this Saturday night in Jordan-Hare Stadium. So we'll talk about that. Also get some thoughts from the opposing side as well. It's Wednesday, the perfect day to have our man Jordan Hill on. And then hour number two is full of some pretty crazy updates around the world of college athletics and college football. So a jam-packed show for you on this Wednesday. But Christian, how are you, sir? Happy eighth day of October to you.
Man, yeah, happy Wednesday. It's going to be a jam-packed show, a whole lot of news, a whole lot of notes that we're going to cover here on the show today. You mentioned it, Jordan Hill joining us at 2:30 p.m. And so because of that, we like to do our weekly dive into Auburn's opponents, and not necessarily, again, on Wednesdays, diving into the game itself, but just places that we've seen opponents have success or maybe some of their strengths. And so with this week obviously being the Deep South's oldest rivalry, we're talking about some of Georgia's biggest strengths, some of their weaknesses, where we see or where we could see Auburn have a little bit of success, where they could try to exploit Georgia just a little bit, and why that might be a little bit scary for Auburn fans to hear when we tell you why Auburn might have a little bit of success. Again, before we talk with Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7, talking about the recap of Kentucky, how that's a big confidence builder. Nobody really predicted Kentucky to have a chance in that game, but there were many saying that Kentucky was going to cover just because of the emotional hangover after losing to Alabama 2 weeks ago inside Sanford Stadium. But Georgia finds a way to get it done rather easily. And then again, asking him the questions of where Georgia can find success on Auburn and where Auburn can find a little bit of success on Georgia. Before we give a little bit more Auburn basketball news, we covered a lot of Auburn basketball yesterday with the SEC Times being released, but have some more non-conference news in there as well. And then, yeah, you mentioned it. Hour number two is absolutely wild in the world of college sports generically.
Yeah, it is. And so outside of our guest at 2:30, the phone lines are open today. If you want to be a part of the show, we'd love to have you on. 334-321-1390 is the call-in number. 334-321-1390. As we flip the page to this weekend for Georgia, how do you feel? How are you feeling about the game? Can Auburn pull off the upset? Betting line right around 3.5. It has not moved since it opened late Saturday, early Sunday. Are you confident in Auburn and Hugh Freeze and the offense and the defense and the special teams, any of that? Or is this going to be another ugly performance for Auburn against the Georgia Bulldogs? Give us a call right now, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067.
And yeah, it's going to be a whole lot of fun. Again, we mentioned everything in hour number one. Hour number two is going to be just as crazy. And we're about to dive into Georgia again. Some of their biggest strengths and biggest weaknesses. Going to get to the phone lines here in just a little bit. But yeah, let us know how you feel. 334-321-1390 again is that phone line number, or 334-784-1067. That is the text box line. Any questions, any quick hitters that you have for us, we're happy to answer for this upcoming Georgia game as well.
Let's head on down all the way down in Lochapoca. We got Lonnie on the phone lines to start the Wednesday edition of the show. What's going on down there, Lonnie?
Oh, not much. I'm going to get it fired up. It's hump day, so we're gonna see what's going to hold this game for us. But I haven't given you guys many prognostications this year, so I don't know if you want to hear my prognostication on a Wednesday, but I'll certainly give it to you.
I think you're
like.
Just trying to brag that you can say prognostication.
I was about to say, I don't even know what that is.
It's a complicated word for Lonnie, I'll promise you that.
Well, go ahead, lay it on us, my friend.
All right, well, let's see. Is Hugh the Hack going to actually do it this weekend? I didn't give out any I think a few weeks ago I called and said I wasn't going to give out any predictions on the two away games, because all I said was that we needed to go 1-1,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't do that. So we went 0-2. So my prognostication is going to be that we go 0-3 in these three games. I've got a little bit of, how about 30-12 Georgia? Pull out the checkbook, Yeller Fatty, because Hugh is done. Write it up. You can go ahead and mark it down. You can go live at the lake and play golf just like every other Auburn grifter and find him a new wardrobe. I don't care what he does. He's done. He's toast. I'm done with Hugh. War Eagle anyway. Goodbye.
Thanks so much, Lonnie. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. In case Filks were wondering, prognostication, he used it correctly. The action of foretelling or prophesizing future events. And it sounds like our man Lonnie down there in Lochapoca is trying to reverse psychology his way into a win for Auburn on Saturday.
Either that or he's just...
Or he's really just done. One of the two. Prognosticating.
So what would be the...
His word was prognostication, but he just prognosticated.
There we go, prognosticated. I was going to say the past tense. Look at this. We're learning a lot of things.
That's the word of the day right there. That is the word of the day.
We learned about the front slash and the back slash yesterday. Now it's...
We also learned about front runner has two definitions to it yesterday.
It did, yeah. We did learn about that here as well, and we might continue that trend here this afternoon. Yeah, so I know what side of the fan base that Lonnie is on from the standpoint of you're coaching for your job. And there's been rumblings. There's been talks about that. Again, nothing has obviously come out from that standpoint. But, man, an 0-4 stretch, you feel like that would be more than just everybody standing on the loading dock. You'd be collecting the ticket. You'd already be sitting in your seats, whether they're assigned or whether you're picking your own seats.
0-4.
If it's an 0-4 stretch.
You're including Missouri in there,
yes.
Too? Okay.
If that's the case, and if you are not making that step, if Auburn does not look good against Georgia, the 0-4 stretch at worst, you feel like would get the engine running just a little bit.
Yeah, and I think we're going to have some more conversations on this in the second hour, but I think Lonnie, and Lonnie's a very loyal listener to this program, and we appreciate him, but I do think he's on the extreme one direction, like on the end of the pole here or the
sure.
spectrum there. I think he's on the extreme one way of I'm out, I'm done, I've seen enough, I have no confidence against Georgia on Saturday. I think there are some fans who are probably on the other side of that say, no, I still believe it can happen. You lost two road games in the SEC to basically top 10 teams, and you lost by a combined, 6-7. So
13 points.
Yeah, 13. There we go. I stopped myself for the 6-7, which is the dumbest trend I think has ever been on the internet
in
my entire life.
Did not even.
We had stupid trends growing up as kids, but 6-7 might be the worst one I've ever heard. Anyway, you lose by two combined scores in back-to-back road games in the SEC. So I do believe that there are fans on that side of it that say Auburn really is close, and that's what Hugh Freeze continues to say. But then there's a lot of people who I think have chalked this Georgia game up to, all right, this is it. This is what you have. This is your last shot. You're off a bye week. You're at home. It's at night, and it's your biggest rival who you have not beaten in the last 8 tries. Now is the time to do it. And more on that conversation later. Those people may have an argument. Given what this Georgia team can and cannot do, this is not the best Georgia team Auburn has ever seen. They are a beatable squad, clearly. We've seen it already.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it here just a couple of weeks ago from the other team in the state, in their own ballpark, in their own night game that they've been asking for what feels like since I was in middle school and high school, having to bear myself with those conversations. And yeah, that's how far the winning streak's gone back, because I used to not even want to go to school the next day because it was like, I don't even know who you are, and you're coming up to me, telling me everything and getting on all fours barking. Not quite, but
basically,
essentially.
Yeah.
But no, again, this team definitely has some more weaknesses than previous Georgia teams have. That being said, they've also found a lot of ways to make up for that. And shout out Casey Mize again for getting the start in game four of the ALDS with Seattle and Detroit. That game is just underway in game four in Seattle. But again, we've talked about how this team for Georgia, they have ways that they can overcome some of their mistakes. That being said, when you try and overcome, it leaves things in, no pun intended, in the backfield or in the secondary for this Georgia squad.
Yeah, and I think there are some trends and some things that Auburn can take advantage of, I think, on both sides of the football, and we'll continue to talk about those as the show goes on. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone lines again. Michael in Auburn, you're on the line. What's up?
Yeah, I was just going to talk a little bit about the Auburn-Georgia and the rivalry. I was a student. I think we won, you know, I was there in 99 when Ben Lear just and Ronnie Daniels put up just ungodly numbers. It was amazing. And the score really didn't, you know, Tuberville, he would get up on people and just kind of, he would call it off.
38-21, right, in 99?
I think so, but we were up so big that, I mean, it kind of was like the Sack Brody game that he just called the dogs off. The score really wouldn't reflect. But, you know, Georgia, whenever Missouri and Texas A&M came into the league, you know, Georgia, I think, asked, you know, if they could switch the game, and we agreed to play in Jordan-Hare 2 years in a row. And so I think, you know, if Auburn really, really wanted to do it and switch that to where you're not playing Bama and Georgia the same years, just agree to play them in Athens 2 years in a row. You hadn't beat them in 8 years. So, I mean, what difference would it make? Just if you wanted to switch, play them in Athens 2 years in a row.
So you would correct me if I'm wrong here. Are you okay if Auburn didn't play Georgia every year?
No, I'm just saying if you wanted to switch it to where you didn't play Bama.
Got you. Okay, I got you. Yep.
Georgia agreed to do that, and they played in Jordan-Hare twice. I think it was 2012, 2013, or shortly there. But in that transition between Mark Richt and Kirby anyway, I think Georgia had one of the worst teams I've ever seen them play. We had White, who got hurt, and his arm was dislocated and couldn't do, and we couldn't even get a first down in the second half.
Yeah,
that was a 13-7 game. I remember that one.
And either the year before or the year after, they blocked a punt or returned a punt to beat us, and so those 2 years were awful. But they come to mind of kind of this streak. We just need to do a little bit better. I did want to talk for a minute about the Baylor game getting moved. I heard a comment this morning that kind of really put it in perspective. I mean, Pat Dye moving the game from Legion Field and agreeing to play at home. I mean, the way that they communicated of why they were doing it, it's kind of opposite of the reason why they moved, you know, the Iron Bowl away from Legion Field. And who's to say, if money talks, I don't think they'll ever do it realistically, but if money talks, are they going to move the game, you know, another bigger game to play in Legion Field because or something like that because somebody offered money.
You know, it's funny. We talked a little bit about that yesterday, about how long until Jerry's World decides to go buy out Texas and Oklahoma. Instead of playing at the State Fair, you're playing in the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, or you're Ohio State and Michigan is playing at the Rose Bowl or whatever the case may be, just simply because of the money that controls all of college football right now.
Yeah, Bama's got Notre Dame and then Ohio State, I think, in like 28 and 30. Those games may get moved or somebody comes a calling, wants those games.
Yeah.
Like, that's just kind of the way we're heading. I mean, I don't like it. I've said it for a long time. I'd love to see Georgia and Florida, you know, play you know, at their home stadiums respectively.
Yeah.
Which they have the past 2 years because of renovations in Jacksonville. Remember that.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it would be as a student, I would want to, I want to see those games on campus.
Yeah.
And I want to experience on the other campus. I just think those are pretty cool. That's all I had, guys. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, man. Thanks again for the call and again for hanging on for just a little bit. But yeah, no, really, really good points. It's unfortunate that that's where the conversation is at right now in the college sports world, of where you feel like you're not allowed to say no to these opportunities. And we were talking about it, Jacob, right before we went on air, just about how you we're in this weird, unique spot where we see both sides of it so well because we're around so much of it all the time. And so we understand, we don't want to be in the spot of John Cohen, but
no.
Again, you would hope and you expect that there's the good interest on that side of things, because what was $5 million a couple days ago, we've heard that number's continued to climb, and Auburn's going to use that with basketball as well. And so again, there's that side of things where you see it, but then we also see it from the students, from the fan base perspective. And
sure.
Again, from hearing from so many guys every single day that share common or uncommon beliefs with everything that we're saying, it really does put in a really weird spot of just, again, how much money controls college football compared to what it was pre-NIL.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We have some text messages to get to, some phone calls to get to as well. We're talking Auburn, Georgia. We want to hear your thoughts as we are flipping the page and getting ready for this weekend. Your thoughts on the rivalry, your thoughts on the game, the matchup, anything on your mind, give us a call right now. 334-321-1390. We get back to the phone lines right after this as we're just underway here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Phone lines are open. If you want to be a part of the show, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We get back to the phone lines and believe we have Anthony who's held on through the break. What's up, man?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Going good, man. What's on your mind?
I just want to know how long you think it's going to take Texas to put the kid from Auburn High in at quarterback Saturday against Oklahoma, because to me, he has more experience. He played ball at Troy at a Division One,
mm-hmm.
and he's proven himself, man, and every, you know, I know, you know, they got to play Arch Manning because of NIL and all that. But the few times the Caldwell kid has went in, man, he made things happen.
Yeah, Matthew Caldwell, the senior there from Auburn originally. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know what that leash is for Arch Manning, because it clearly hasn't gone the way they wanted it to. And I think he's super talented, and I think it will all click for Arch at some point. But the factor you brought up about NIL and things, I mean, that is something that plays into coaches' decisions nowadays, which is unfortunate, but especially with somebody like Arch at the quarterback spot with the hype and the money and the name that he's got. Yeah, I'm not really sure what that leash looks like, to be honest with you, Anthony.
Yeah, another thing I just saw last night, they were talking about the competition – that Arch played in high school versus I watched high school football around here in this area. Been
mm-hmm.
doing it over 50 years, and Caldwell played against tough competition. I saw him when he beat Central
Yeah.
In Central. So, you know, it don't even compare, man. So, but like I said, I just listen to y'all opinion on that, and a good listen to you, though. Take care.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Anthony. Appreciate you holding on through the break as well. We appreciate that. I mean, Caldwell's clearly the number two guy. He's the only other one that has stats so far. I mean, I think one other quarterback, technically Carl Lacey, has one pass attempt this year for Texas. And problem is Caldwell only has 10. He's 7 for 10 this year for Texas. And I don't know. I've heard people bring this up, Christian.
He was the one, too. Don't remember when we were having conversations, he was the one that was all but committed to Auburn.
Yeah.
And then
the hometown kid
decided to make his way out to Austin.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard people bring this up. At what point, if it continues to not go well for Arch in Texas, do you, for his own good and for the team, do you bench him and play somebody else and just admit you put him in too early? Admit that he just wasn't ready for it yet. Now, I will say, I think there are more issues with that Texas offense than just Arch Manning. But, of course, he's the one that gets all the quarterbacks get all the fame and all the blame, right? That's the saying as old as time. But the fact that Arch is just a 60% completion percentage passer, has 5 interceptions, that doesn't help. Folks, he's been sacked 9 times. That doesn't help either. And we're very familiar with that here in Auburn. And so is there a world, Christian, in your mind, where Texas goes away from Arch Manning, whether it's before a game or during a game, and all signs and things would point to Matthew Caldwell, the Auburn kid, getting some playing time there in Austin? Is there a world where that happens, in your opinion?
I mean, I feel like you still give Arch time. I mean, it sucks to say, but this is essentially the freshman struggles, right? I mean, you're seeing the shine, but you're also seeing the frustration of it. It's more of the fact of everybody's heard his name since he was a sophomore in high school, to where you feel like he should be a junior or a senior in college. And going back to what Anthony was saying, yeah, I mean, everybody's seen his high school clips of him walking around in the pocket and then just flicking it 30 yards to a wide open receiver because the two safeties ran into each other. I mean, that's essentially what he was going up against. But if anything, you feel like the boat is more in Arch's hands, maybe not for the remainder of this season, but for next year. You just feel like there's so much pressure. I mean, again, you're at the University of Texas with Steve Sarkisian, and the amount
quarterback
of
quarterback whisperer.
Right, the quarterback whisperer. He's supposed to solve all of the problems, and when you watch Arch drop back and throw the football, his arm does not look healthy. I mean, there's been a lot of videos going around of him grimacing just about every single time he throws the football. And so, again, I know the media controls so much of it. If this was any other quarterback, you wouldn't hear as much about it, other than the fact that he has the last name Manning on his nameplate. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm not somebody to give up on a freshman just because of some team struggles, which, again, we've watched plenty of Texas games, and you're seeing that it is by far not only him that's having any struggles.
But, I mean, at this thing, too, I mean, him being a sophomore, right, sitting behind a year ago and now stepping into it, you thought that was the way to do it, and I think it was. But if it continues to be stagnant or gets worse, I think that's probably where Anthony's coming from. And of course, wanting the Auburn kid to get in. And to his point too, I mean, look, playing high school football in the state of Alabama is legit, especially 7A ball, playing the likes of Auburn and Opelika Central and Thompson and things like that. I mean, I put the state of Alabama in the last 5 to 10 years in the top 5 of the state, or top 5 of the country. There are some states that are leagues above it, but I don't know. I just think with the schedule coming up, that's a big part of it too for Arch. I mean, here's what Texas has: Oklahoma, Kentucky, Mississippi State, so some chances to get right there. Vanderbilt, Georgia, Arkansas, Texas A&M. Like, it's still not easy for the Horns, but I don't know. I guess we'll see what the decision is for Arch Manning.
If the Red River is not pretty in the first half, I think there could be a conversation.
I think so.
That's from the standpoint of when you at least make that change, because they did the same thing Texas did with Quinn Ewers last year hosting Georgia when it just was not pretty. They went to Arch and then went back to Quinn Ewers.
Yeah.
And obviously you're hearing so much of the Texas fan base and everybody around Texas saying, Sark, I'm so sorry for shooing away Quinn Ewers and for not understanding what the true talent or story level was just because of the frustrations you're seeing now in Austin.
We mentioned the sack numbers for Arch Manning. He's been sacked 9 times. Jackson Arnold's been sacked 20 times this year for Auburn so far. Someone sent us a text as we get back to Auburn, Georgia here for a moment before we take our bottom of the hour break. And then Jordan Hill, our Georgia insider, will join us as he does every Wednesday. Georgia has 7 sacks through the first 5 games. 7 sacks through 5 games. Not great, not terrible. This texter says, if they don't get at 3 minimum on Jackson Arnold on Saturday, I find it difficult to think that they will win inside of Jordan-Hare. So this texter is saying that he believes sacks are a big part of what Georgia's going to try to do defensively, and I tend to agree.
Not only sacks, where Georgia ranks 110th, Georgia is 104th in tackles for loss.
So negative plays aren't really Georgia's thing right now, which is wild to think about with Kirby Smart and the defenses that he has had, but that is a small sample size and more to come on that of the argument that this Georgia team, while still very talented and still capable of doing big things, this is not the same Georgia we've seen in years past.
It's not, but it's weird how contradictory it goes because, again, they are 110th in sacks. They are 104th in tackles for loss, but they are 13th in run defense. So they might not get to the quarterback or get to the backfield, but they don't let you really cross the line of scrimmage when you are running a football.
Yeah, they set up a wall that doesn't really move. They're not getting after you, but you're not getting through them either.
Exactly.
So,
and it doesn't help that Auburn is 134th in sacks allowed.
Yeah, no way that could go wrong this Saturday, right? We'll talk to a guy that knows more about Georgia than anybody we know. It's Jordan Hill of Dawgs 247, our Georgia insider, a weekly guest here on the program. He joins us on the phone lines coming up next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And this guy joins us every week, Wednesdays at 2:30, and we love getting the insight on the Georgia perspective of things when it comes to football, basketball, recruiting, and beyond. But this is one of the few times throughout the year that we kind of get to double dip with our man Jordan Hill of Dawgs 247 because it's Auburn and Georgia week, my friend. And look, Auburn fans are, I don't know how to describe how they feel at the moment, but Georgia fans are probably pretty fired up for this one, huh?
Yeah, I think they're ready for this test, and appreciate y'all having me back on. I'm sure that there are plenty of people who listen to the show that probably don't usually listen, you know, look forward to 2:30 Central on Wednesdays when I'm coming on if they're not Georgia fans. But this is a nice reprieve for them. We get to talk a little bit about Auburn as well as Georgia. And looking forward to it and appreciate y'all having me back home.
Well, I always say, and I have said for as long as you've been on with us, which is a long time now, and we always appreciate your time and your friendship here with us on the program, but I really do think most Auburn fans care about the rival perspective, the Bama side, the Georgia side, opposing teams that they're going up against. And so we always love having you as a staple of this program each and every week. But again, it just means a little bit more when Auburn and Georgia are going after, which they will again this Saturday under the lights here in Auburn at Jordan-Hare Stadium. And there's a lot up for grabs, whether it's just the win, a win streak, or Auburn trying to get the season back right. But up to this point, Jordan, Georgia, of course, coming off the loss to Bama, but then the win against Kentucky. Was that the bounce back that you think Kirby Smart and the Dawgs were looking for last week at home against the Cats?
100%. And I thought it was an opportunity where it would have been very easy for Georgia to kind of play with its food. It was a 12 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. It was against a Kentucky team that has struggled to this point. And all due respect to Georgia, they took care of business. They came out touchdown drives on their first two drives. They forced a punt on Kentucky's first possession. And, you know, Kentucky kind of made it interesting early in the second quarter, kept it respectable. But, you know, by the midway point of the third quarter, the game was out of hand. Georgia did what it needed to do. I mean, I think on the whole, it was a successful day. Georgia finding the end zone five different times, the defense forcing a couple of turnovers. Really, the only negative out of that game was left tackle Monroe Freeland got hurt his ankle. We're going to see if he'll be able to play on Saturday. It seems like from what we've heard to this point, ankle injury wasn't quite as severe as they were worried about initially. So we'll get a better sense of that on Wednesday night. But no, I thought that they capitalized against a Wildcats team that is not as good as it's been in years past. They made it, you know, they made sure it was a game that was not all that interesting in the second half. Wound up getting some backups in that fourth quarter and successfully moved to 4-1 without much fanfare or much to be worried about.
Georgia wins it 35-14 to move to 4-1 and 2-1 in SEC play. Jordan, it's a guy we talked a little bit more about last week, but wanting to continue the conversation again this week with the running back room. And Chauncey Bowens gets 15 carries, 70 yards. We know that Nate Frazier is supposed to be that running back one, only had 7 carries for 34 yards last week, or 2 weeks ago, rather, against Alabama. It was continuing to ride the hot hand. Is this just another continuation of that story throughout practice all week, or is Chauncey Bowens really becoming that number one guy for Georgia?
No, I think Chauncey's the number one guy right now, and it's a combination of what Chauncey's done. I mean, and this even goes back to fall camp. He really turned heads with how he ran the ball in fall camp. He's done a good job during this season. I think he kind of announced his arrival, at least nationally, in that Alabama game. He was such a big part of Georgia's comeback in the second half and their attempt to close the gap against Alabama. And he followed it up with, you know, not necessarily a huge game against Kentucky, but continuing to fall forward, continuing to find yards. And I think you got that, and combine that with Nate Frazier's ongoing fumble issues. He's fumbled twice in 5 games at this point after losing 3 fumbles last year as a true freshman. So I think Chauncey has pounced at the opportunity. He's taken advantage. And looks like the lead back, but I'll give him a lot of credit. We talked to him for the first time on Monday. He talked about, you know, how much he supports Nate Frazier. Now, there's obviously competition within that room, but they understand that they need each other as well as the other running backs to get Georgia where they want to take it. So I think that they have all taken the right approach to this. Like you said, Frazier, he actually didn't play at all after that fumble against Alabama. That was his last carry. But they got him back involved in the Kentucky game, and I thought he played well too. Bowens will be the top back, I think, going forward, but I think you'll still see plenty of Nate Frazier, and they want to get him right and make sure that he's capable if he has to take a larger workload in the week ahead.
Jordan, we began diving into this Georgia team a little bit earlier in the program, and looking that Georgia is 110th in the country in sacks. They're also 104th overall in tackles for loss, yet they're 13th in the country in rush defense. Is that by strategy? Is that just by the Kirby and this defense kind of utilizing their strengths, realizing we might not be able to get to the quarterback or get in the backfield as efficiently, but we're going to make that stone wall at the line of scrimmage? Or is that just a compliment to some of these teams that you've played so far?
No, I think it's just a product of what they've got on defense. I think it's a defensive front that is able to, you know, like you said, kind of set that stone wall, but has struggled to get into the backfield. And it's a defensive line, you know, I'm fascinated to see on Saturday night when it comes to playing Auburn. If you see more production, specifically when it comes to sacks, it's a defense that when you discount the inside linebackers, only one player has a sack this year, and that's defensive nose tackle Nnamdi Ogboko, and that's far from the guy that would have been my pick among the defensive linemen if I was to predict who would be responsible for that sack. So they got to be more productive. Obviously, Auburn's offensive line has struggled and been very susceptible to this point in the season, but you do wonder what corrections they were able to make during the bye week. What did they clean up? What were they able to change in preparation for this Georgia defense? So, no, it's a defensive front that, you know, I would describe it as holding its own. It's done a great job against a run, but really struggles to get in the backfield get those tackles for a loss and certainly get those sacks. I think they have to take a step forward. They have to be more productive on Saturday night against Auburn and Jackson Arnold if they want to escape Jordan Hare with another win.
We got our man Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 with us on the phone lines on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. And we look at this Auburn team, right, a program that, of course, we cover every day. But you beginning to look into this team, and you were mentioning there a little bit about the offensive line struggles. And it seems like it's easy for the outside to look at this Auburn squad and the weaknesses that they have. But what are some of the strengths of this Auburn team that you think could expose some of the weaknesses of Georgia if Auburn's looking to pull off the upset here?
Well, I think it starts with Auburn's defensive line and what they've been able to do this season, how productive they've been, you know, to kind of compare it to what Georgia has struggled with when it comes to sacks and tackles for loss. And, you know, they're going up against a Georgia offensive line that is young and pretty inexperienced. Talented, but inexperienced is how I would describe the line right now. And the big question to really determine, you know, they may be even more inexperienced if Monroe Freeling, who's a junior, is not able to play. And we'll find that out hopefully on Wednesday night, and it'll definitely be something we follow the next few days. But you've got two true freshmen starting right now. You've got Juan Gaston at right tackle, and you've got Dontrell Glover at right guard. You know, given the circumstances, I think they've played pretty well, but you understand that this will be just their second career road start after that game at Tennessee back in week three. So, you know, we know how loud it can get in Jordan Hare. They deserve a lot of credit. That line as a whole didn't have any false starts in Knoxville, but, you know, it'll be much harder going to Auburn and seeing what they can do. So that's really my focus when it comes to the advantages Auburn has. And the other thing I would point out is the skill players on offense. I mean, you look at Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton. You know, they faced Cam Coleman last year, and then Eric Singleton had a huge game against Georgia at Georgia Tech last November. So Georgia has been susceptible to giving up explosive passes. If you wanted some examples of that, just watch the Tennessee game. I mean, that was such a huge reason why Tennessee was on the precipice of winning that game and pulling off a big upset. So fascinated to see how exactly Auburn goes about trying to test this secondary. You know, I think if I'm Hugh Freeze, I don't hesitate on the first or second possession on Saturday. Let's take a shot. Let's try to get the ball downfield.
Oh, Jordan, no.
That's just what I would do against the Georgia secondary that has been susceptible, has had some issues in coverage. We know that Georgia, you know, Georgia understands the talent Auburn's got at wide receiver, but they've struggled to get those guys the ball. If you're going to beat Georgia, you have to connect downfield. And I would say that that's going to be what Auburn has to do to have a chance to win.
We talked, or we were planning on talking a little bit about it before getting you on the phone lines, Jordan, about where Auburn could have success and why that might throw a bunch of Auburn fans into a panic attack because – yeah, it's unfortunately the defensive secondary for Georgia is the part where Auburn's going to have to find a way to take advantage. And, you know, why would you not want to hear that as an Auburn fan, that Auburn needs to throw the football more? But continuing what you were talking about, Kirby was asked a lot about Gunnar Stockton, or Jackson Arnold, rather, about his running ability, saying that he doesn't necessarily run like a quarterback. He's not somebody that's going to completely avoid contact, runs like a running back, will run, try and run through the defender to pick up the extra 2 or 3 yards. How do you expect Kirby to try and handle Jackson Arnold's running ability versus dropping guys back and forcing him to throw?
Yeah, I mean, I can't help but think about 2 years ago when this game was in Auburn, and you know, very early in that game, Peyton Thorne broke off, what, like a 65-yard run that I think kind of got Auburn, you know, kind of woke Auburn up and made them say, all right, you know, we got a game here. Let's try to do something. And I think that, you know, Jackson's got that same kind of ability. So, yeah, fascinating to see exactly how Georgia tries to play him, because I think he's got more of that dual threat aspect than some of the other quarterbacks that Georgia's played this year. I mean, notably Joey Aguilar at Tennessee and Ty Simpson at Alabama. I mean, those guys can move, but I think Jackson Arnold might be a little bit more athletic than both of them. So, yeah, I think what you're going to see is I think you'll see the inside linebackers used in some blitzes. I think that they want to take advantage of, again, a shaky offensive line for Auburn and try to try to frustrate Jackson Arnold and try to put him behind the sticks. I think that, you know, one of the big issues Georgia had in the Alabama game was allowing Alabama to convert on third down. I think Alabama converted on, I want to say, their first eight third downs of that game, and you could just, you know, feel that home crowd, that the juice kind of being taken out of it. You know, Georgia wants to do something similar when it goes up against Auburn. It wants to make Auburn get in those third and mediums, third and longs, and make life difficult for Jackson Arnold. How much they spy him, I'm not sure, but I do think they'll turn the heat up on him, make him make plays. And Kirby said this about Ty Simpson after the Alabama game. You kind of had to just tip your cap when he made plays and move on. I think it's going to be a very similar approach against Jackson Arnold. They want to heat him up and see if he can handle it or if he's going to make mistakes that really help the Georgia side.
Our Georgia insider, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, joining us here on ESPN 106.7. He does every Wednesday at 2:30 p.m. Central Time. And look, this is a rivalry that is historic, yes, but has been dominated by Georgia as of late. They've won eight games in a row, Jordan, against the Auburn Tigers coming in to this game on Saturday. Georgia fans, what's the feel of them around this rivalry right now? Because, again, it's been so one-sided, and Georgia's gone on and they broke through the barrier, right, of winning national titles and things. I mean, is Auburn even on their mind, or is this just another game for Dog fans this weekend?
Well, I think it is a game that has truthfully lost some of its luster. And the thing to say that Georgia fans don't want to hear is the one way to bring that back is for Auburn to break this streak. You know, you want to see that competitive nature in any of these rivalries. But, you know, I think it does matter, too, where you're talking about when it comes to Georgia fans. I think, you know, folks out in Carrollton and Columbus and the west side of Georgia, they're always going to care about this game, perhaps more than any of the others. But yeah, given the state of the programs right now, I think for Georgia, you know, Florida is always going to be toward the top. I think you consider the Alabama series a rivalry, although it's kind of, you know, the opposite of this Georgia-Auburn series. Georgia just cannot find a way to beat Alabama, so that one matters a lot. And I think the one that we'll see in November, especially that it has kind of regained and sort of been reignited, is the Georgia Tech rivalry.
Right.
And Georgia Tech should have beaten Georgia last November, and Georgia made plays late to force overtime after overtime, and Georgia winds up winning. So I do think it's fair to say this game has lost some of its luster, but you see that in any rivalry that becomes one-sided. All it takes is that other team getting the edge and ending the streak, and all of a sudden the blood gets boiling a little bit more, and you get a little bit more excited for that next game to see who can get out on top when the two teams meet again.
It's Auburn and Georgia this Saturday inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium for the Deep South's oldest rivalry under the lights between the Tigers and the Dogs. I assume you're making the trip, right, Jordan? You can't pass up a chance to come back to the Plains, right?
Absolutely. There's no way I was going to miss out on this trip. It'll be nice to be back in Auburn for a couple days, get a chance to catch up with some folks, and get ready for what I really do think will be a very entertaining game.
Well, for folks looking for more information between now and then on the Georgia Bulldogs, insights, injury reports, all that sort of stuff, tell the people where they can go to find it.
Definitely, dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at dogs247. Going to have the Junkyard Dogcast. We'll record 3 p.m. Central Time on Thursday. We'll have on Auburn Undercover's Nathan King to help us talk about Georgia, talk about Auburn. And, hey, I want to shout out those guys at Auburn Undercover with Nathan, with Christian Clemente, Jason Caldwell, Philip Marshall. They do such a fantastic job covering Auburn. This has been a fun week for me because I've been able to go read their stuff, getting ready to kind of prep for this game and to learn a little bit about Auburn. So they do a fantastic job. I think might be a little biased here, but I think if you want to learn about either one of the teams, go to the two 24/7 sports websites. I think we will give you guys everything you need to know.
Yep, both sides do a fantastic job, and we appreciate you as always, my friend, joining us on this Wednesday afternoon. We look forward to seeing you on Saturday inside the press box.
All right, sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Check it out again, dogs247.com. He is our Georgia insider and joins us every Wednesday at 2:30 on the phone lines here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We'll take our final break, come back and wrap it all up in hour number one before we get into a jam-packed hour number two here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. This is the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Got a couple of minutes before we wrap up the first hour, get into the second hour. Thanks to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 for joining us as he does every single Wednesday. And again, weeks like this, it's always fun to have him on to truly cover Georgia and tell us what he thinks about their matchup against Auburn this Saturday in the Deep South's oldest rivalry. Yeah, the fact that Georgia has beaten Auburn 8 times in a row. Auburn has not beat Georgia since 2017, the butt-kicking that was inside of Jordan Hare before Auburn did it. They beat the number one team in the country in Georgia and then turned around and did it again against Alabama in the same season. It really is tough to think about that it's been 7 years, but 8 tries.
Well, that's how far, I mean, when we went back and talked about Georgia-Tennessee, I mean, what did that get up to 8 this year as well?
Was it 8 or 9? Yeah, it was close to that.
But again, the fact that's how we saw that from the outsider perspective, mm-hmm. We're in the same boat.
It's almost like Auburn's in their Tennessee era.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't that crazy?
But the best thing is that builds a lot of confidence for this game on Saturday is, again, the fact that Georgia is 13th in the country in rush defense, but 86th in the country in pass defense. So the best way to truly beat this Georgia team is by putting the ball in the air and throwing the football and throwing the ball deep and throwing the hitch routes and
I'll add fuel to the fire here. Not only has Georgia beat Auburn 8 times in a row, Auburn's only beat Georgia 3 times since 2006.
That's when you were born.
Pretty much. Since the year 2000, right, Auburn, I guess you could go back to 99. Auburn won in 99 too, right? You won in 99, 2000, 2001. You lost back-to-back games. You won back-to-back games. And then it began. You lost 4 in a row from 06 to 09. You won the game in 2010. You lost a couple after that. You beat them in 2013 on a miracle play where Georgia, people forget, Georgia almost came back and won that game twice, right? Even after the tipped pass and touchdown for Auburn.
Georgia got short.
Georgia got down inside scoring territory, okay? Auburn wins that one. You lose 3 straight. You beat them bad in 2017 on your way to the SEC championship game. But don't worry, Georgia got you then. And that started the 8-game losing streak against the Georgia Bulldogs. So you're flirting with 9 in a row, which is Georgia's longest winning streak ever against Auburn in the history of this matchup. So they could tie that this year. And they could do it in Jordan-Hare under the lights. You may hear a particular bird that might be out making a booing sound for a certain head coach. And so
I believe that's just his first name.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I think that's what they mean by it. So more on that coming up in hour number 2. Crazy updates around the world of college football, transfer portal window, betting on sports, and a whole lot more. That's coming up in the second hour. Stick around.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this Wednesday afternoon here in the Auburn-Opelika area. And just getting underway here in the second hour of today's program. If you missed any of the first hour of the show, you'll be able to catch up with that on the podcast version of it on ESPNAU.com in our podcast center, where in the first hour, we started to dive into the Georgia Bulldogs a little bit. May get into that some more here in hour number two. But I had some good phone calls, got some of your thoughts and opinions out there about the matchup as well. And then we got the professionals' opinion on the Georgia Bulldogs because our man Jordan Hill joined us from Dogs 247, as he does every single Wednesday. So all of that was in the first hour of today's show. If you missed it, again, check it out each and every day in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we talked about it. It's a lot of just generic news, but it's a lot of big-time news in the college sports world. We're talking about what the NCAA is adopting a proposal for.
Trying to
based off of if all three divisions of D1, D2, and D3 agree. It's absolutely wild. We'll get to that here in just a few moments. We have some news along the transfer portal window that was approved yesterday. And all of the coaches in college football breathe their collective sigh of relief as it is one window. It's a one-time window for athletes to enter the college football transfer portal. A little bit of basketball news, and then we continue our conversation talking about the Auburn-Georgia game and what the breaking point could be. Again, what does Auburn need to do? What needs to change? But then what is that breaking point for Auburn fans? Is this the breaking point for Auburn fans if things do not get better? All of that coming up here in hour number two.
Yep, and with no guests today, phone lines are wide open, so anything that we are talking about and you want to jump in on, you can, or anything we're not talking about that you want to bring up, you absolutely can do that as well. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390 is the call-in number, or you can always shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. We begin there quickly to start hour number two. Someone texted and said, I think Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler are slated to do the game on Saturday night, talking Auburn and Georgia. I'll be at the game, so it doesn't matter to me, but was just wondering if you guys knew anything. That's actually not true. So Kirk Herbstreit, Chris Fowler typically call that Saturday night ESPN ABC game, right? But
except for Red River weekend.
Except for Red River. They called another one this year, too. They called another 2:30 afternoon game, and I can't remember which one it was. But they have branched away from that just a little bit, right? Herbstreit and Fowler are clearly the A team for ESPN games and on college football, right? And this week they are actually slated to call Red River, Oklahoma versus Texas. I'm trying to remember which other game they called in the middle of the day, the 2:30 game rather than the night game, because they do typically call the night game on ABC. But I'm trying to look.
It's
and
okay.
See.
Well, while you're looking at the other games,
it was Georgia Tennessee. That's who it was. They called Georgia Tennessee.
I was thinking at Georgia Alabama, but yeah, that's obviously.
Yeah, they called the Georgia Tennessee game at 2:30, the SEC game on ABC.
But I can go ahead and make fans happy that who will be calling the game if you're not inside Jordan-Hare Stadium? It's Sean McDonough and his color commentator, Greg McElroy.
At least it's not Aaron Murray.
If they would have done that, I mean, my goodness.
This game's too big. He no disrespect to Aaron Murray, but he's not the B level. That's the B crew is McDonough, which I really like McDonough.
I do as well.
Greg's fine, but, you know, the best way to do it is to pull it up on television and listen to the Auburn Sports Network radio broadcast over on Wings 94.3. That's the best thing you can do with Andy Burcham and the guys. So pull that up. But, yeah, somebody texted about that, so wanted to address that. But there's some crazy news things going on around college athletics, and we start the second hour of the show with something that was proposed today And this still has to be adopted, okay? So this is not official yet. This is not officially a thing yet, but it seems like it's well on its way. The NCAA is, quote, moving closer to student athletes and athletic department staff members being able to legally sports bet on professional athletic events. Again, the NCAA is on its way to allowing student athletes and staffers and employees in athletic departments to legally bet on professional sports. And this is something we talked about, gosh, I don't know, 6, 8, 12 months ago, this idea, right? And I don't even remember what the topic was and why it got brought up on the moral question of, okay, should sports betting be allowed at all? Should it be completely banned? Should college athletes be able to bet on pros and pros be able to bet on college, but not on your own level or on your own sport? You remember us having this conversation, and I don't remember why we were, but we said this very thing could happen, and here we are. The fact that if all three levels of competition adopt this and approve this, Division I, Division II, and Division III, any student athlete in college sports and any member of an athletics department could pull up FanDuel or DraftKings or Underdog or PrizePicks or whoever. They could pull that up on their phone or their laptop and they could bet on the Saints on Sunday. They could bet on the Mariners to continue winning this game against the Tigers. They could do whatever they wanted. College athletes could bet on professional sports if this becomes a thing.
Yeah, it says the NCAA, as of now, still prohibits all betting on college sports, as well as sharing information about collegiate competitors with any other bettors. Any rule change regarding gambling on professional sports would not impact NCAA regulations prohibiting advertising and sponsorships associated with sports betting for these NCAA championships. The D1 Administrative Committee, which is directed by Division I Board of Directors to make the change. They did make it clear, however, saying that approving this rule change, quote, is not an endorsement of sports betting and they don't condone it for student athletes. So thankfully, the fine print of every single medicine, when it's read at 400 times speed of what everything it could cause, that's essentially them covering their own tracks. If we're going to make it legal, but we still don't want you to.
Yeah, we don't want you to smoke cigarettes, but they are still legal. We don't want you to go have that beer, but if you're 21, you're allowed to do it. Which, just using those as examples, the NCAA in that statement says, we don't condone it, but you're allowed if you want to. And I just...
That's the first time I've seen that quote.
I haven't seen that quote. That was, yeah, genuine quote, reaction.
Approving this rule change is not an endorsement of sports betting, particularly for student athletes.
Which I'm going to go ahead and call BS on that. Because what did we see in the professional level, right?
Exactly
what did we see with ESPN where those companies said, no, sports betting bad. Betting on sports is bad. We don't approve of that. No, we don't do that. We don't condone that. We don't want our fans to do that. No, we don't do that. And FanDuel and DraftKings and all those big betting companies, they kept pushing. They were great salespeople. They kept coming back. They kept being told no, and they kept coming back. And they said, hey, what about now? No. All right, cool. We'll
look
be back.
At how much you're missing out on.
Yeah.
You don't like that? Okay, well, cool. We'll be back in 2 months with a new number.
And they did it over and over and over again until ESPN, the NFL, the NBA, and all these big organizations, they finally folded. They finally crumbled to the dollar sign. And now look, every other advertisement is about sports betting. You see it on TV. You hear it on the radio. We talk about it more than ever before about betting lines on a particular game because those organizations folded to the betting world.
There's now national shows on TV and on ESPN talking about bets. ESPN has their own betting source and everything like that. You can walk into whatever game you're wanting to go watch professionally and go walk up. Honey, I'm going to go to the restroom real fast. And you would just open this one little door, and now there's all of these crazy little monitors that are screaming at you with flashy little numbers and everything.
And half of these places have legit sports books.
That's what I was referring to about you could walk right in, but rather than, yeah, they, you can sit and, yeah, it would be cool to go watch the actual Oklahoma City Thunder game, but I'm going to sit up here in this room with a couple other guys, and we're going to make sure that Shai Gilgeous can, you know, score his 30 points that he needs.
So my point to all of this being the NCAA says that they don't condone it and they're not going to give in to it, but how long does it take for the NCAA, if they're even still around and managing the top level of college athletics, to give in and take betting company dollars, right? Well, take money from those sports betting companies and fold like everybody else
has. Exactly what this is, step one to that exact thing of, oh man, we're realizing how much is being made on the professional level. The only reason that it's not in the college level is because, you know, it's still frowned upon because these are kids and everything.
I have a better idea. Well, maybe not a better idea, but I have a more logical idea on how I think this could go, because it kind of sparked something just now. We've talked about the NCAA. They won't be managing the Auburns and Alabamas and Georgias of the world very much longer, right? Those schools and programs are going to eventually tell them to kick rocks, right? That's what we've talked about for so long. So once those big-name schools and programs and athletic departments are no longer under the umbrella of the NCAA, rather than the NCAA folding and taking those gambling dollars, when does the world come around to where the University of Alabama could fold and say, yeah, we'll wear that FanDuel patch on our jersey. We'll put FanDuel on our on Nick Saban Field at Bryant-Denny Stadium. Sure, we'll put that blue FanDuel
that or
logo
even,
on there.
Even if it's not a specific team, it's the SEC or whichever way they decide to go with it.
Or just even advertisements in the stadium, right? The stadium or in the arena or around campus or in the, you know, the programs and stuff like that. I mean, that it's been so frowned upon for so long. And finally, when the big time people, the big name companies like the NFL and ESPN and those guys finally crumbled, this day has been coming for a long time in the college world too. And this, you're right, this is the first step of the NCAA saying we might allow college athletes to gamble on professional sports. And so that's the next part of this, Christian. Are you okay? Because I can't remember what your take is on this. Are you okay with college athletes betting on professional sports since they're not competing at the same level? Are you okay with them betting up or professionals betting down to college? How do you feel about that?
Before that, again, just proving our point, we're sitting here watching the Seattle-Detroit game, and look what's on the left side of the screen. It's a FanDuel account that shows the odds to win for each team. Like, again, it shows you
that's the world we're in now.
It shows you how the sports world has given into everything on that side of things. Being somebody that was fortunate enough to play professional, no, I'm just kidding, but play collegiate baseball, there's much more communication that goes into the college and professional side of things that many people realize. So, no. I, you know how easy it is to, hey, bro, I know you just got called up, and I know you're taking the field today. What's it looking like over there? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not public, but what is that pitch limit that coach has you on? Or, you know, I know that you're the wide receiver number four, and you've been talked a lot, but are you planning on taking true snaps on the field this game on Sunday against Houston? Like, are you planning on which again, that is all very illegal right now. But there, it opens up such a window of, man, ain't no way that something could go wrong with this, right? I mean, that being said, though, from the college perspective of if this becomes legal, why would you not have the top three quarterbacks that are all friends sit around and make a podcast about gambling? Those names, you know what I'm saying? Like, that would draw, that would draw the fan base in. I mean, not saying this person in specific, but, I mean, think about the crowd that Travis Hunter on was streaming and on YouTube and his platforms on that side of things. Imagine if it was legal and FanDuel then paid Travis Hunter to be able to talk about gambling.
Yeah.
And be able to talk about who he likes on Sunday between this team and this team, or this player versus this player. I mean, it opens up so many wild doors to where there's already an issue. We've seen it now where these sites allow you to put credit card number in, not your debit card where it immediately takes it out. It's a credit card that can be put in. But as long as you promise to pay it back, then it's not going to be any issue. You lose the first one. How many of these people, okay, man, we gotta double down. I got to put more in there to make sure that I can cover the bill, the statement this week.
Yeah, that's a pretty wild thing to think about, is you can build credit on a gambling account, which is
And now
wild.
You have kids that are making more money than they know what to do with at the college level, and you're now making that legal.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like there's so many negative ways that this could go where it will be circled all the way back to if this is approved or not.
This felt like one of the few instances that the NCAA had a chance to not give in to the pressures around them. Because while there was a pretty big push for this, again, we're talking about this idea that the NCAA is on its way to allowing college athletes and college athletic staff members to bet on professional sports. Still has to be voted on and approved by D1, D2, and D3 levels, but all signs point towards this happening, right?
Well, yeah, sorry not to cut you off, but that even more so of, okay, you can bet on professionals, but there is no way you can get any insight from this Vanderbilt program and place your own bets through a third-party person.
Well, I was going to say, how can you limit them? Because, I mean, you can't go into their betting account and take out all the college stuff. You just have to... Okay, greater question. How do you track that?
Exactly.
What's the number now? How many collegiate athletes are in D1, D2, and D3 college athletics in the United States of America? How many college athletes are there in the year 2025 at all three divisions?
There are 550,000 student athletes participating in NCAA sports from the 2024 to 2025 academic year.
550,000 college athletes?
Yeah, 19,000 championship teams, growing the number of student athletes.
How in the world are you going to track that? It's impossible.
You have to put in your information and say whether you're a college student athlete or not, but wildly enough, the star quarterback's girlfriend isn't, and although you talk with all of these people...
We just saw this with John Mateer. We just saw this with him. And then 2 years ago, we saw it with Brad Bohannon at Alabama, the baseball coach.
Well, we see it every other week with MLB pitchers
you
that have to go on administrative leave.
The best player of all time, who had his translator betting for him. Like... Yeah, I don't like it either, but my point to this, and we got to get to break, and we got a phone call on the other side. My point to all of this was an opportunity, a rare one, for the NCAA when they had people pressuring them, people coming at them and begging them to make this call and this decision. This was a rare opportunity for them to stand their ground and say no, and they couldn't do it.
Well, they're hurting for money, so.
They folded again. They folded. They gave in. They wimped out because they felt like they had no choice, because they're trying to satisfy every party that they can to hold on to any legitimacy as an organization. That's what happened here. So the NCAA on their way to allowing college athletes and college athletic staff members to bet on professional sports moving forward. Let's take a break. We'll come back, get to the phone lines, read some text as well here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show, 334-321-1390, or shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And we were just talking about the idea that the NCAA is going to be probably approving the action of college athletes and college staff members to bet on professional sports very, very soon. And that's one big piece of news, Christian, but there's another one that came out yesterday that people are pretty fired up about as well in college football.
Yeah, fired up, but more on the happy side of things as the NCAA officially adopts a new transfer portal rules, which is including, again, a major adjustment for players and for the coaches. Again, you feel like the coaches of college football are unanimously and or not simultaneously rather taking a sigh of relief as the college football transfer portal window in 2026 will run for just 2 weeks, January 2nd to January 16th. And yes, because of the 12-team college football playoff, which extends a little bit deeper into January, players that are participating in a postseason game on or after January 12th will have the opportunity to start a transfer portal process during a 5-day period, which begins after their final postseason game. And so rather than having a month-long period and then a 2-week period later after spring practice, that is all gone. It is 14 days from January 2nd to January 16th.
I like it. I like it. I mean, coaches have been asking for it. They've been begging for it. And while it may not be perfect, it's change and it's moving in the right direction. And it's what is necessary, I think, at today's level.
Well, you might see spring games again. Because that was the reason why everything went away, was because you didn't want to get basically recruit your class and they come in and you show off in your spring game and then that portal opens and, oh man, it's crazy that I didn't enter the portal, but I got a call that offered a little bit more money. And you know what? That does sound a little bit nicer than what I'm able, what I'm making here. The grass is always greener, so I'm going to go take that.
I have more thoughts on that, but let's get to the phone lines. We got our man Ty the Tiger joining us right now. What's going on, brother? Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday, guys. You know, this kind of sounds like the Nancy Pelosi thing, being honest. You know, I feel like, and I don't want to get into politics, but I feel like sitting members of a cabinet or Congress should not be able to publicly trade stocks.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, you got Nancy Pelosi that is doing better than hedge funds and everybody else because she's got the insider trading. And now you're going to get, you know, okay, well, they're allowed to bet on professional sports. Well, what stops a kid calling his buddy that was in school last year and saying, hey, man, I'm gonna put 20 grand that you get over 100 yards or under 100 yards or whatever.
Yeah, and I'll split you in if it wins.
Yeah.
And then at what point do you see athletes start to throw games or throw a play or do whatever, right? We've seen that in sports. We've seen that over the history of time too. I mean, yeah, if your buddy calls you from the NFL and says, "Hey man, I know you're the quarterback out there at Wyoming, but if you've got that free lane to run, don't take it. Just get down right there. That'll be okay."
I mean, it just opens a box of Pandora's that we've already opened with this NIL, and now we're just feeding fuel to the fire.
That's
and
right.
It's getting, you know, it's getting to be they're trying to pull the wool over on our eyes, but I mean, it's all about the money.
And a thought that I just had, which is absolutely wild to think about when you're, Ty, talking about how NIL, again, opened all of this, which, again, we all are seeing the effects of it. If this is approved, man, how long until there's a high school student that doesn't want all of his money in NIL? I want it in a weekly gambling allowance to be able to put towards my account and use that on whatever I want.
Or whatever. I mean, it's just, it really is, man. It's getting away from the passion of sports. It really makes the Little League World Series the only sport you see on TV that's for the love of the game.
You
dude.
Can bet on that now, too, which is
oh,
wild.
My God.
Yeah.
But, no, and I'm not saying I'm not a gambling man. You know, I'll be honest. Hey, this past weekend, I hit for $700 on a $10 bet on a FanDuel pick.
There you go. You know? All right.
And I had let me tell y'all what I had. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but I had an 8-leg parlay, and all I need was Jahmyr Gibbs to score a touchdown. And when they made contact at the 5-yard line, he turned them legs to get in. If you saw his touchdown, was absolutely amazing. But, you know, I'm a guy who just sells cars and raises kids. I'm not putting a multi-million-dollar game.
Sure.
Because each of these games, I mean, you know, I mean, look at the uproar that Auburn, you know, giving out on this this switch to Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I mean, Auburn and its vendors and local businesses, they're going to lose millions from this. Lee County's going to lose tax revenue from this. It's all about money.
That's right. It's all about the money, brother.
You know, and it really is, man. It's sad that it's like that, but it's just the world we live in, man. It's the root of all evil, and it is what it is. But I do want to say, man, I want to say one thing to the Auburn faithful and the Auburn fans out there. Stop with the skies falling. Stop with all of it. We lost two top 10 road games on the road by less than a touchdown or right at a touchdown. If we beat Georgia and Jordan-Hare, the ship is right. Everything's okay. You know, these are the same fans that ran Bo Nix out of town. And we've got to change, guys, or we're going to just always be this. Because I'm seeing the hate on Jackson Arnold, and I'm seeing the hate on Hugh Freeze. Let me tell you, we wouldn't be in any of these positions right now without Freeze. Maybe he can do a better coaching job, and yeah, we can critique him a little bit, but talking about firing him and talking about Deuce Knight right now is not what you need to do as a fan.
I understand fan
stands for fanatic, and that's what we are. But at the same time, guys, that look around the country at who's got two losses and what's going on, everything's still in front of us. If we run the table, you know, I mean, now if we go 5-7 at the end of the year and don't beat Georgia or Alabama, because we talked about this at the beginning of the season. If we're 8-4 and we beat Alabama or Georgia, good year to build on, right? We all said that, 9-3. We were all happy with that at the beginning of the year. We still got that in front of us. You know, I still got my bet of 7.5 wins over for Auburn, you know, talking about the gambling. I still got my bet in. It's still available. So, anyway, just want to tell everybody, take a deep breath. Crazy things happen at Jordan-Hare on a Saturday night.
That's right.
So, let's see what happens. And I'll be at the Mizzou game cheering us on. So, let's see where we'll be at, man. And as always, guys, we're damn it.
Appreciate the call, Ty. 334-321-1390. We're going to talk more about those conversations here in just a moment when we take our bottom of the hour break. Just to give folks a reference, right, to kind of put a bow on the betting and transfer portal stuff that we were talking about. In 2023, okay, in 2023, Americans – oh, where did it go? I lost that number. How about this? In 2024, Americans bet $148 billion on sports in the year 2024. I'll say that again. $148 billion were put on sports gambling in the year 2024 from Americans. 95% of that was online, by the way. That is a 25% increase from the year 2023. You want to know how much revenue that generated, aka profit, for the sports gambling industry? Of the $148 billion, billion with a B,
meaning losses for the individual,
$13.7 billion. Think about that. Americans gambled $148 billion last year on sports, and $14 billion of that was pure profit. A 25% increase from just the year before. So I'd be fascinated to see what the 2025 numbers will be. So just keep that in mind. When all these organizations are selling out, it's because they're in the green. So let's take a break. We'll come back, get to some of the things that Ty was talking about, because that seems to be where things are trending right now with this Auburn and Georgia game. Are jobs on the line? Are players' futures in Auburn on the line? And what will the fan base do if the Tigers can't pull it together? We talk about that when we come back here on ESPN 106.7.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got about 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And we're talking more Auburn and Georgia, right? And we were talking a little bit in the first hour about the matchups and the things that Georgia does well, maybe doesn't do so well, and how Auburn can kind of take advantage of those. And more on that tomorrow and on Friday as well. But, Christian, it seems like the trend for Auburn fans as of late, it's the closer we get to kickoff, and I thought this would be the case, and it's turning out to be true, a lot of the fan base, not all, right? Ty isn't in this category.
We've now heard from both sides today.
But it seems like the majority has started to chalk up this Georgia game, not as a loss, not yet, but more so of, this is kind of the final straw, right? This is kind of the final chance for Hugh Freeze, this staff, this team, this program, to see if they can turn it around with him at the helm. And whether you think that's fair or not is your opinion. Whether you think that's true or not is your opinion. That's just kind of the census that I'm getting here from talking to people outside of here, seeing it on social media, hearing from folks here on the radio, talking with some people in the building. I mean, that just seems to kind of be where this is trending. And if the performance is anything similar and reflecting of what the last two games were against Oklahoma and Texas A&M, Christian, I don't see how this game doesn't become that and have that narrative around it.
Yeah, it's at the point, too, where not even just from a confidence standpoint of we have to win this game to save the season, but you're at the point of needing something different. That way the post-game press conference is not what you've heard, A, the last two games, and B, the last year and a half of, you know what, this is what we should have done. Going back to last year, Auburn did not look good over their past couple weeks, had a bye, and then played Missouri, played at Missouri. And it was, okay, during the entire bye week, we're having the evaluations, we're making some changes, we're going to do what we need to do, and you saw the exact same thing come out after the bye week. I think that is where a little bit, or not even a little bit, a lot more of this pressure has grown for Coach Freeze and the staff is the frustrations of continuing to do the same thing, continuing to say the same thing game after game, every single Saturday night, every single Monday morning, and Monday evening as well. Freeze even said it on Tiger Talk on Monday that the fans are tired of hearing how close we are. And you feel like that's relatively accurate because that's where, again, a lot of these frustrations are continuing to come from. And again, to be able to put all of this on one game, yes, has a lot of pressure. You want to be able to take a win-loss out of the conversation, but you feel like that's where it's at least, again, from the confidence standpoint of this season, because you're 0-2. You fall again here, you're going 0-3 in your last three, and all of a sudden, what confidence is there going to be in Missouri coming to town the following week? And it was exactly what we talked about could not happen when we were breaking down this schedule all summer of what if you beat Baylor and you're 3-0, and then all of a sudden you get to the point where you're halfway through the season and 3-0 becomes 3-4 with the same exact problems, you're not seeing progression anywhere. That's where things really, really begin to crumble.
Phone lines are open. If you want to chime in on this conversation, you can. 334-321-1390. Give us a call, or you can shoot us a text in our On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. We get to the phone lines again. Terry, you're on the line. Happy Wednesday, sir.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing all right.
What kind of validity do you guys give to the rumor out there that's quietly out there that if Hugh Freeze was let go, DJ Durkins would be the replacement?
Let me push back, or I guess answer that with a question. Are you alluding to if Freeze, for just speculation, what if here, if Freeze were to be let go mid-season, are you talking about DJ Durkin taking over as interim, or are you talking at the start of the 26th season, DJ Durkin being the next true head coach?
Both.
I think he would absolutely be the interim if Freeze were to be let go at any time at this season. I think that would make the most sense.
I think that's why there was a lot of conversations on the price increase to keep DJ Durkin on the Plains.
Right, and then I do think that if there is a change made at some point in the lead role, I don't know at this point, Terry, just being honest with you, if DJ Durkin would be the guy, but I think he would be in the running for that, absolutely.
I personally think it would be the biggest mistake since Harsin.
Why is that?
Because he's a defensive guy, and Auburn's problems aren't on defense.
That's fair.
Auburn's problems for the past umpteenth years has been on offense.
But what if they were to, and just, again, playing devil's advocate, conversating here, what if he were the head coach and he went and found the best offensive coordinator in the country?
And who would that be?
I think there's options. There's a lot of them out there. I mean, one in particular, I don't know.
It would be more so the standpoint of not losing what you're already building on the defensive side.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got a feeling it'd be a strong mistake.
That's fair. Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying Hugh Freeze is the answer, and Lord knows I've been in his camp, but I think, you know, DJ Durkin would be a mistake. I just think he's would be a mistake.
I think losing him altogether would be a mistake. And there may be a world too where a guy like DJ Durkin may take the Gus Malzahn perspective and say, I don't want to be a head coach, right? Because that's, I mean,
even if it was pay me like I am one, but let me just stick to what I want to do.
I mean, DJ's making great money as a defensive coordinator, and he's dominating his role. Look, Auburn has to find a way, Terry, because they did just give him a pay raise, DJ Durkin, that is. They've got to find a way to defend off the big names every single year because he's one of the best DCs in the country, and that's why they paid him more.
There is nothing wrong at all with being a great coordinator.
No, there's not.
I just people lose sight of that. They want to be a head coach. I guess it's the ego getting in the way, or they want to, or the desire.
That's 100% what it is.
There's nothing wrong with being a great coordinator at all.
He's making $2.5 million a year to be the defensive coordinator at Auburn. That's pretty spiffy.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, like I said, losing him would be, catastrophic, but hiring him as a head coach would be catastrophic, I think.
Well, and that's. I mean, that's a fair point, man. That's your opinion. I get you. I totally understand.
You know, because there's a fashion of Auburn fans that thinks that they live by the mindset, well, we got to win with great defense. Great defense wins championships. Well, I've heard that crap for years.
Yeah, it hadn't been Auburn's problem in a long time.
Yeah, and it was true in the 80s and the 70s, but it's not true anymore. It's just not.
Yeah, and you've been on that for years, Terry. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, offense wins now. That's what gets on the top 10 on ESPN. That's what recruits the players to your school.
It seems like now,
offense.
It seems like now defense keeps you in the game. Your offense has to go win it for you in college football.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390, just for reference.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
DJ Durkin making $2.5 million a year. Jim Knowles, the highest-paid defensive coordinator in the country at Penn State, 3.1.
Yeah, and again, that was who they had to fend off because as soon as that conversation came into existence, the next call that you felt like Ohio State, Penn State, basically both of those programs made were, let's go get that Durkin guy. Let's go look at what he's been able to do because, man, his defense finds a way to keep him in games and – you know, his offense hasn't been rewarding him. Look what we can offer.
Well, heck, they went up against him when he was a head coach.
Yeah.
When he was in the Big Ten. I mean, they know. They knew exactly who he was, which is why Auburn paid him and one of the highest paid DCs in the country. Let's get to the phone lines again before we take our final break. Jeff and Auburn, you're on the line. What's up, my friend?
Afternoon, guys. I 100% disagree with Terry.
Okay.
He just said Auburn's problems haven't been on defense. They've been on offense. So we hire an offensive coach, and we're terrible on offense. So let's hire another offensive coach and be terrible on offense. So that comment made zero sense to me. I would 100% take DJ Durkin to be the coach and go find an OC because you're going to hear the same thing. Lane Kiffin, Dan Lanning, none of those guys are coming. You're not getting those coaches.
Not now. Yeah, you're right.
I would 100% be fine with DJ Durkin being the coach.
And I think you said it. It's the idea of at what point can Auburn get away from, let's go get the, you've heard this term, right, Jeff, the offensive genius or guru or whisperer or whatever term they throw out there. Why not go get a good head coach who can recruit, right, manage the program, that CEO that we've talked about, and go find an offensive coordinator that knows how to call plays in 2025?
Yeah, we need a football coach is what we need.
Yeah.
I mean,
in its simplest way, in the simplest way put, yeah, you need a football coach. That's right.
A football coach. But that comment talking about where we hadn't been good, well, we've hired office coaches and we still haven't been good.
That's so, there's an argument
to
that.
I'm fine with DJ Durkin and go and get you an OC, keep the defensive staff. I would be fine with it because somebody's going to hire that guy eventually. And he might fall into space somewhere else. I don't know that. I mean, he was at Maryland, but Maryland's talent was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So I just know you're going to hear the usual names, and everybody's going to be, oh, we're getting Kiffin. They're not coming.
So, Jeff, just pushing back, in your perfect world, if it was Durkin that became the number one guy, is there somebody – That's in your mind, if it's not Lane Kiffin, Dan Lanning, is there one of those guys, or is that just out for Auburn to go out and hopefully find the best that they can?
Are you talking about football head coach?
Either if Durkin is promoted to the head coach, but then stays with the defense, who would that offensive guy be rather than going and trying to find the offensive head coach?
Oh, I mean, I think you could find an OC. I think you could find an OC in the NFL and somewhere like that.
Yeah, like a Joe Brady?
He probably wouldn't come, but I think you might find a quarterback coach or somebody like that.
Sure.
To be the OC. But, I mean, if it came down to it, just say it came down to it, Auburn was looking for a coach, and I don't want Hugh Freeze to get fired. Like, we do not – he needs to win because we don't need to be looking for a coach and set back another 2 or 3 years.
Right.
We just don't. But if they got rid of Freeze – and then Schumer comes up from Georgia. So would you rather have him or Durkin? Because his name would be in the hat, I'm sure.
It 100% will be.
So, I mean, I just think you could go find you an OC and the DC wouldn't meddle in it. And
sure. No, all good points. All good points. Jeff, we appreciate the call, my man. Good points there and good pushback from a former caller and making good points. But I think everybody's in the same boat here as we got to get to break. I don't think anybody's there yet of saying it's over, it's done, fire Hugh Freeze, get it out, get it over with, let's just move on. I don't think anybody wants that, right? But people are, you can hear it in the last 30 minutes. You can hear how the conversations have shifted since the loss to Texas A&M.
The conversation has a lot more tension to it.
The tone is different.
Yes.
The verbiage is different. You're really starting to speak in the, well, if this happens, if that happens, if they make a change. That wasn't the conversation for the most part to start the season. You had those people, sure. But those weren't the messages, and that wasn't the tone, and this wasn't the conversations that we had. But it's quickly turning to that as this game gets closer on Saturday.
It's wild to think what 4-1 versus 3-2 looks like. It's also a wild thought that 5-2 could look a whole lot different than what it could the other way around.
Yeah, and that's where Auburn fans are. So we got to take a break. We'll come back, wrap up the Wednesday edition of the show right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We got about a minute before we are kicked out of here. Man, it's been a great show today. It's been a lot of fun, and we appreciate anybody who's been here for a segment, an hour, the entire thing. If you've missed any of today's show, you can always go back and listen to today's program or any of our other shows on ESPNAU.com in the podcast center. You can also listen to the show live there every day, so if you're in your office or out in the garage or whatever, pull us up on the website ESPNAU.com or that Radio Alabama app. Tomorrow is Thursday, and it will be a jam-packed show, as it always is. We'll have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network to hop on and preview the Georgia game, talk a little bit of Auburn basketball, and maybe some fall baseball updates for the Tigers as well. We'll have Auburn High's head football coach Keith Etheridge. He'll join me live at 3 o'clock tomorrow. We'll talk about the loss last week to Central and how the Tigers are going to rebound against Smith Station on Friday. And then Chris Gordy of the Locked On SEC podcast in hour number 2. So Thursdays are jam-packed. We'll have it for you here 2 to 4 on ESPN 106.7. Then Friday, Free For All Friday, we'll talk a lot of college football, Auburn, Georgia. Lee Sterling will join us as well, so we're looking forward to that for the rest of the week. But we are back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.